know a long time ago, this was way early in the boycott, when that letter was sent, that dear sir, this letter is being sent to brokers and chain stores,
That was signed by Caesar.
Yeah, now, were we supposed to copy that letter and send it out, or, you know, it just occurred to me.
I never knew that. That was
see, the funny thing is, when I went to, I went to see all the people in the food terminal, and nobody had ever said anything about, they heard anything about it, so I figured maybe they forgot to send it to Canada or something, you know, maybe they sent it to me.
Well, no one
had Ken Blumberg sent it out.
Yeah.
I got a copy of it, but incidentally, in the letter, you know, before, you weren't saying, would you please help us, you know, explain the sort of thing. Damn it, you better do it or you're going to find yourself in trouble. And, you know, I think if I'm going to get a letter like that, asking me to do something and telling me right away that if I don't do it, you know, that right away they're going to come and beat my head in, you know.
Oh, I thought it was a good letter. Oh, no, it was. It didn't come right out and say it. I thought it was a good letter.
Who signed the letter?
You did.
And incidentally, another thing, I don't know if this was done in the other cities, but the brokers that I talked to and the distributors got a letter from Jamara with a copy of the grapes.
Yes.
I don't know if this was done in every other city.
Did we ever get a copy of that?
I asked for it, but the guy said, well, I lost it.
Now, once they got up in Toronto, they got a pamphlet that the grapes. They all got.
I don't have a letter from Jamara.
So I called my three small kids and Dolores's, I think, one. And I, you know, stand him up in front of me and I said, well, you know, we're going to have a little play for Michael when he gets here. And he said, okay. So I said, I thought it was going to be about the well guy, so I, I'm tired.
Right.
Do you remember?
Who am I?
Oh, yes. The first question was that I asked, I trained them, you know, I told them what to say, so what I'm telling you is now like the end after they've gone through the rehearsal. I asked the first one, who am I? And he would say, you are Chairman Caesar. And then the second one would say, what is a huelga? I would say, I would ask, what is a huelga? The second one would say, the huelga is the people. The third one would be, can the huelga be against the people? And then the third one would answer, no, because the huelga, because the people is a huelga. And then the fourth one would say, why? And then the fourth one would say, why else? And then the fourth one would say, the people cannot be against themselves. And then, in unison, all of them, I would ask them, who are you? And they would say, we are the future leaders of the socialist revolution. That's not it, isn't it? I didn't stop there. I played it for Marshall, and Marshall thought it was cute, so we played it for Dolores and for Helen and for... And then, you know, they went... Listen, they went to school and they were telling the teacher about these things. So I stopped there.
Nobody told us about Mac.
About Mac?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is
hilarious. Oh, you
don't
know about Mac?
No, we never.
People
keep asking us,
and
I don't know enough about it.
What
Mac?
I thought everybody
knows
about Mac.
Yeah, we don't want to bother you. They talk about no communication. They don't mention the fact they all got together in Chicago. Yeah.
We all got together in Chicago.
Oh, it's more like oh, Fred, tell us, I hear that you got Rodriguez Ramirez in a TV program.
Yeah.
You and Tony?
Yeah.
I just tell you what happened.
Oh, come on.
No, I didn't know anything. No, I can't talk to you. I haven't talked to anyone.
Oh.
Helen tried to tell me, but she forgot most of it.
Yeah. Well, most of it was Ramirez trying to red bait you and the union and, you know, the whole thing.
Who's on
there? Well, he's the, more or less, the organizers for Mothers Against Chavez.
Not now.
You probably remember quite a while ago when they, during the green card, when we were fighting the green card issue, well, they started some kind of a protest group among the mothers out there in Wheeling. So then they took it from there, and so I don't know how Les Train decided he was going to do this TV show quite a long time ago, and he came up and taped and shot Caesar. So the first 10 minutes or 11 minutes of the show were Caesar and Les Train up in Delano, and that was very good. And out on the picket line and listening to Mrs. Zapata talking to the scabs and all that. And then he let us go at each other. And he started out by introducing us, you know, and then telling the listening audience where Delano was. And he said, you go up the 99 Highway, and on the right-hand side, you have the big growers and blah, 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 and the Mothers Against Chavez. And on the left-hand side, you have the union. Property, so, yeah. He said, and that, and I'm not just speaking geographically. And then he introduces Ramirez, and Ramirez goes right into his long song and dance about how it's a bunch of agitators and radicals and revolutionaries and, well, he didn't actually use communist sympathizers or communists right then, but a little later on in the program he did. And then he said that he was called up by, he was asked to come up by this group of people on the other, you know, on the right hand side of the highway. Who?
Depends on which way you're going, huh?
Yeah,
north. They always headed north.
And then he made a big thing about the reason that the mothers were all involved in this was because Cesar Chavez and the strikers were mother beaters. They were all. They were always beating up the women, you know. And this is what he kept harping on, that he heard these horrible, horrible stories when he came up there to meet with these people over there on the right-hand side of the highway. And so then Tony asked him if he went over on the left-hand side of the highway to check on those stories to find out if they were true. No, he said. So Tony asked him, well, how come you didn't? You went up there and they didn't ask me to come up with my left. Well, you were right up there. Why didn't you go across and find out instead of coming out with all this stuff? And he said, then I found out that the union wasn't strong. It didn't have anybody. And so Crane asked him, well, how come? What made you think so? Well, he said, all those people are working out there in the fields, you know. If they belonged to the union, they wouldn't be out there in the fields. And so I said, well, you know where those people come from? He said, well, sure, they live, they're Delano people. He said, they're from Delano. I said, no, they're not. At least 50% of them are not. They're from Mexico and Texas. What? He said. And then he jumps on Crane. Now, this really seemed to be news to him. You know, like, what? He said, you see, if you had let me, if you'd given me more than 24-hour notice to come on your program, I could have brought my people down here and then we wouldn't be getting and making mistakes like this. Yeah, Crane was taking him on. Crane was all on our side. And Les Crane, yeah. Yeah. And so that he made some comment about how Caesar, Caesar wasn't any farm worker. He knew of a time when Caesar, he just going around dressed up like a farm worker. That's what he said. And they said, I knew a time when Caesar used to have a suit and he had a tie. And so Les Crane said, well, are you saying that everybody's a communist who has a tie? and then he began to Well, he blamed the union for making the Mexican-American people think they were discriminated against. He said that before the union came along, well, everything was fine. Everybody was making, $30 or $40 a day out in the field. He said $30 or $40 a day. And everybody was, naturally, everybody was happy with making $30 or $40 a day. And there wasn't any trouble. There wasn't anything wrong in their lives. They were very happy. And so Crane said, is that so? Gee, all these years I've been wrong about this thing. You mean to tell me that the Mexican people have always been treated like other segments of the population always? No, they've never had anything to complain about. And he sidestepped that a little bit, but he is the same as said that, no, there's never been anything wrong until these radicals and agitators and so forth like Chavez and the rest of them come in and stir the people up, you know. And the same as saying, you know, that there's just nothing that anybody should be complaining about. They've had it as well as anybody has ever had it in this country, you know. So that was getting a little bit toward the end of the program. And we had, Crane had, it was leaning over a little bit backwards to let this guy talk because of the fact that Crane was on our side and he was constantly giving him the needle, you know. Whenever we weren't, well, Crane was. And so he wasn't letting us do it so much, though, because he wanted, this guy had complained, you know, about, you're three against one. He didn't actually say that, but that's what he meant. And we didn't butt in anywhere near as much as we actually should have. The first part of the program wasn't very good. Well, the last 20 minutes was real good because we kept butting in all the time and just chopping into pieces. We remembered everything that he had been saying all that time and when we were kept quiet, you know. So the last 20 minutes, we just took it point by point by point by point and just chopped him down just like that. Right up the end and wasn't that about the way it went by the last 20 minutes? And he got very, very upset and so Crane he began talking about all these other groups like MAPA and so forth that were all tied in with us and, you know, making it look as though he was saying that there were communists in these other groups. And so then Crane pinned him on that and said, are you saying that that these people are communists? And can you, and he said, yes, I am. And he said, can you name them? And so he said, do you want me to name them? Well, then Crane, I guess, decided he didn't want him to be named because he'd put in a lot of these other groups. And so he said, do you have the documentary proof that these people are communists? He said, yes, I do. He said, all right, will you be willing to bring it if we have another radio pro or another TV program and present that? Yes, I will, he said. So Crane then told us that we would have another chance to get at him with another TV program as soon as he brought the names. And he'd let us know as soon as he brought. And I guess he never brought the names because he's never gotten a hold of us, has he, up there? Mm-hmm. And so then I told him, you know, about the history very quickly of my association with the Spanish-speaking people during the last 20 years and how I had never gone into a community without having been asked to come in by the people because they had these big problems. And I told all about the discrimination, all the different types of discrimination that the people had suffered from all the years that I had seen myself. And then talked about Caesar and all the things that he had done. Then I wound it up by saying that if by trying to make it appear that Caesar is somehow connected with communism and so forth. He's actually making an indictment of the whole Catholic Church in Southern California, because the Cardinal just came out about 4 weeks ago and gave him the award as being the outstanding leader in labor during the whole past year. So if you call Caesar this, well, he was saying the whole Catholic Church was nothing but a bunch of communists. And, well, just then that was the end of the program.
What happened to that group? Is it still on?
Huh?
That group of mothers is still on?
Yeah, they're getting... They went out to a picket line once, and they took brooms, brand new brooms, you know. They went out there, and they got off the cart, and our pickets, you know, our pickets are mostly the older Filipinos. They're just picketing, you know, going along picketing. The guys, the mothers jumped up, you know, out of the cart. They got the brooms and they swept their feet, and all of a sudden the TV camera from Channel 23 appeared, and they took some pictures, and then they went back and got in the car and took off. And then what's the name of that? Patrick, what is his name? Patrick, the millionaire? William Penn. Patrick. Sent some food for Christmas here the other day, and so did Governor Reagan, I understand. It was an appeal. They brought food, and then the Bakersfield, California reported a couple of days ago that over 1,000 families had gathered to receive the food. And before that, the same guy, this millionaire, came. They had a party at the, they had a little fiesta at the park. They brought a mariachi. So we just let the word out to all our members, and we're just to go and have some free beer and some brothers. And they did, and then they got a little drunk, and they got into an argument with him.
That was when Ramirez was up there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. They didn't. I said, you go, you know, if they want to, if they should go, I said, yeah, go ahead and go. But don't argue, you know, just eat their food and drink their beer. You know? And so they were going around, they were saying, gee, Mrs. Galardón, who is the kind of the local leader, you know. Going around and, yeah, she's the big mother. She's going around, you know, it's nice, all these farm workers, and Julio Hernandez, and most of them were there, and Julio, she looked around all over, they're all nothing but union members all over the place.
he was bragging about that.
How many people do you got?
Oh, well, you know, enough to begin. We started with less. But
they had an office there. Well, they still have an office, yeah. But there's never anybody there anymore.
No, they closed it now.
Huh? They closed it?
They now have their office at the post office.
Oh, I see.
Oh, there's no one there? There's
a sign
there.
It's on
Main Street.
No.
Anyway, they put a sign in the window now that says... offices moved to box 73 or
something. Bill Kircher came by, and I didn't tell him anything. I just took him there. And we got in the car, and I said, you know, I said, stop there. And I said, now, you see it's saying, where? Over there. And he couldn't see me. He couldn't make, you know, MAC. He said, you know what that stands for? No. So we got off the car, and we went over, and he saw that the underneath have a letter, you know. I would never believe it. I would never, if you wrote to me or told me, I would never. So he went and got his camera in the room and took some pictures, took three pictures.
Yeah.
Gave me one, he kept one, and he went over and he said he wanted to see President Meany. So he got an appointment, and just to show me, he said, I want to show you something that if I told you, you would never believe. So he showed him the pictures of that, you know, that's something that I know. So Meany took it and he said, you know what, I want to keep this. So he has this front office has a lot of cartoons, you know, like he has a couple of art cartoons that appear in the labor press on our first victory. So he's got art, you know, maxing the picture that on his bulletin board. But they're active, isn't it?
How come Meany never comes to the Leno?
That's a good question. We go to Washington.
I was going to say that happened about the way it happened when the Teamsters had $10,000
worth.
The celebration at the park, they next to the high school.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big rally, you know. Grammy was there and everybody.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The were there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this was planned or how it came about, but a lot of our union members went to this rally, you know, party. And these guys, they drank about a couple, 3 days of peace, and they started hollering, Viva Chavez, you know. Right there, and Grammy was there, all the people were there. And, I think I'm a fight this. They drink up their beer, and then here the teamsters thought that they were controlling all these farm workers. Viva Chavez, you know. They got all shook up over there.
Is that platform still up, the one they put in the morning?
No. I think it took it off.
Did anything happen at the end of the year? I mean, you know, like, did they give us more money or something?
Oh, that's right. I don't know about that.
No. No. I was there, it started, I got there on Monday. No, on Tuesday. And the convention started on a Thursday. And I was at the convention for the first morning. And I didn't come back until, on and off, you know, I would just come in for the whole thing. We're doing a lot of politicking with the, trying to raise money and, you know,
sure
doing a lot of,
Yeah, you got to the man up in Seattle pretty well. Somebody did.
Oh, we did a hell of a lot of hustling all over the place, Larry and I, you know. We split up, you know, we'd go by ourselves, and we'd go out to the state delegations and the international presidents. We talked, there must have been about 80 or 90 of the international president. I think we talked to everyone. We just went out. But, and then we had a lot of requests from, well, they still had a couple of requests. And we didn't do so good on one we did, on the other one we didn't. But anyway, and then I didn't come back until about an hour before I spoke. And then I spoke and we took off. And the president came right after a little while.
There is in Miami? Said,
yeah.
Did you hear a suit?
No. Oh, let me tell you about the suit. Thanks. No. Did he tell you about the suit?
Oh, we just laid that out.
We walked in, see, and Kircher went over to the manager, I guess. You know, I got in charge. He said, look, I don't want any problems. We're going to have some farm workers. And some of these guys don't wear ties and they don't wear any coats, and I don't want any damn problems from you. And I said, oh, no, so at 7 o'clock, you have to have your tie and your coat on, you know. Well, hell, you know, at 7 o'clock, I didn't have a tie. So it was all right in the lobby, and it was all right in most of the places, except they had this bar. And I didn't get in trouble until I went in there one evening with, well, anyway, I went around, so then about the second night I was there, this guy comes over. He's well dressed. I thought he was a labor leader. He calls me and says, hi, you know, like, hi, you know. And labor leader said, who are you with? He says, I'm with a hotel. He says, we don't, we have a, you need a tie and a coat. I said, oh, I do, yeah, here. I said, no, I have a special dispensation. And he said, yes, I don't have to wait. I have a special arrangement here. You talk to your manager. So he thought I was kidding, you know. But he left, you know. I just didn't pay attention. So it must have been around, I think it was on a Saturday or a Sunday. I finally got a hold of the guy from New York, his name, the New York Central.
Ben
Arsdale. And he said, I want to talk to him about having a fundraiser over in New York and other things. So he said, well, let's go and have a drink. And I said, well, okay. So we went in, and the guy says, yeah, you need a coat. So I don't have a coat and I don't have a tie. So then I said, all right, I'll go. He went out, presuming, got his coat. And so I put his coat and I went in, you need a tie. And we kept walking. The guy kept pulling my coat. You need a tie. You can't be in here without a tie. And then I said, you know. So we sat. And the guy sat right next to me. He said, look, young man, you need a tie. You need a tie. So then when I still get something, he says, look, I said, don't bother the man. He's a Mexican nationalist, and Mexican nationalists never wear ties. He looked at me and said, I'm sorry. He said, as a matter of fact, you know, like, you know, just don't you know Mexican nationalists?
Naturally, to wear a tie.
Huh?
It's naturally to wear a tie.
It is.
Yeah. I think it was wrong. Because some of the Mexicans, you're wearing them in Boston, you know.
Yeah.
Give them your arms.
But the fellows were really, I know, they were very great. The church staff got together the first day we were there. We didn't know that they had done this, and they, you know, they contribute $10 a month to the strike on a checkoff, you know. And it's the only group of laborers that do this. But then they also got together over there, and the it's very expensive. Man, those rooms and the food is really loud. Oh, very expensive. And they got together and they collected about almost $300 among themselves. And so they were going to pay. See, the Federation paid our plane ticket and our room and our telephone, and but not the food, or you know the other drinks and other. Expenses. So they got together and said, we're going to pay this. So then they got the money and they said, well, what do we do with it? And so one of them, they said, the guy who works for this? The Shetler was there. And he said, well, let's give it to Caesar. He can, you know, serve, you know, he and Larry will eat all that. And the Shetler said, don't give it to Caesar, because if you do, he won't eat it. He'll take it back to Delano. So they took us out to eat. And then at the end, we're ready to leave, you know. Then that's when I found out that they had taken the collection. They gave me about $160 that were left. But the other people were very, very good. They're, you know, see, because when we talk about it's a strictly a labor issue, and we want to organize, and the bastards won't let us organize. Any labor leader understands this. And so it made no difference of who they were, what union they came from. Everybody was very cordial and very, you know, it showed that they were really friendly. And they went out of their way to talk to us, and we had all kinds of invitations to go eat with them and to go drink and, you know, all these things. But we did collect a lot of business cards. And actually, after the first day, we wanted to start writing them, because all of them said that they would help and so forth. And a couple of them, maybe about 10 or 12, wanted to know if I could recommend some good people for staff, you know. And one of them said, look, if we give me a good Mexican-American, he could become a vice president of any national union just like that. And a lot of them, do you have any good people with you? You can have, yeah, a lot of them, but you're not going to get them. So that was, and then he had a lot of, we met who Walter Pigeon was there, and
Jerry Lewis,
terrific guy. Yeah. He spoke on the muscular dystrophy.
Oh,
yeah, and we talked to him. He was good, and we talked to the head of the Screen Actors Guild. Heston. Yes, we talked to him before, you know. But we talked to a guy named Levin, I think, who is the executive secretary, and he was surprised that we hadn't got any money from Hollywood, so we're working on some fundraising there. And then Bill Kircher on Sunday, about everybody in the convention, including ourselves, we left in such a rush, and I didn't take my button with me, I didn't take any buttons, and Larry didn't take his. But all the convention, the only guy wearing a button was Bill Kircher, our button. And on Sunday, he called a meeting of all of his staff organizers, and about 55 different international unions came. Some international presidents came to this Sunday morning. It was a meeting on the problems of organizing. But they came because these are the unions that are actively organizing, and Kircher staff works with, you know, they helped them. So they were interested, they came. And then they met till about noon, and then Kircher staff had some sandwich made, and they brought some sandwiches and pop up to the conference room. And then he showed them the film Huelga. And you know that there were a lot of wet eyes in that audience? Really got to them. That film really, really got to them. They were really, you know, when the film was over, they were really, really with us.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt, but can we get a hold of that film
Is it possible? That's one thing. If we could get some kind of something like that.
Yeah, we got it. We talked to Mark Harris, who's the producer. And,
yeah.
He says he's got his own copy, and I think we got a copy of it too. And he'll let us have it.
Do we have a copy now?
I don't know. If we use it for our fundraising purposes,
I give it back to Valdez.
He'll work something out so we can use it then.
Well, see, they gave one to us, we thought, but it turned out that the theater took it with them. And so it's theirs now.
He said we could use it for fundraising purposes. We talked to him first.
So we don't.
What I am pleased with it, and look at it from. I don't know who got it from, but he talked to Valdez, and I had it on there, and then he wanted, you know, and I needed a real bed out there. So I just sent it to him. And so next time I get a hold of that, I know I don't want to send no more.
Can't we get a copy made or something?
But
it's $300.
Then we have one.
Huh?
Didn't you have one?
That's the one that.
That's the one that.
No.
You got from the
theater?
Yeah.
I got from the theater, but the 18, when you were in the convention, I had the film myself.
But there are many prints.
Yeah.
The auto workers have it. They showed it
at FBI. The auto workers have it, and so and Kirch's office, well, the education office in the Yale Field building.
Well, I wrote to the education department to George Kirch. And he wrote back and said that it was scheduled to be shown on television, wasn't sure when, and was not available for distribution until after the television show.
It was shown on TV, got second place at the Canadian Film Festival.
On TVO.
Washington. And had honorable mention in France at the film festival.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, and got an award from Mexico. Not first prize, but, you know, some of
Washington became a virtue of the union, and he went to charge us for using that. And I called them back, and I told them that it was our feature, it was a farm worker there, you know, and now...
We made it,
and now you want to charge us on it? And about 30 minutes later, I had a phone call, you know, to forget about it, you know. And then I ordered that virtue of the union. I didn't pay for that either. It was 3 weeks. I mean, versus the union and
Harvard Decision Delano and...
Oh, Decision Delano, that's the
other Decision Delano.
We're going to get these things together.
Versus the union and Welga and...
That
union is born.
Yeah. Yeah, we could get...
Welga is the colored one.
What is the colored one? No, the Delano is
talking about. Oh, which is the one that
they placed in Washington?
The one you drew is in... The one you go in Miami, you don't show by the houses where Luis Valdez are. Right?
Yeah, it's the one. Luis Valdez is sort of narrating part of it.
What just happened? Do you know anything about the films in Texas that were shown, you know, Channel 4?
No.
Has anybody made any prints from those?
Yeah, we have a lot of stuff.
Where's
your guitar?
Upstairs.
Why don't
you
get it? Alright. Well, we'll wait for this, for the guitar. We'll...
We are all this fresh.
I guess we'll start in the morning because we're fresh. We'll start with the figures and the statistics. And Jim's going to give us some more information on the grape. He can tell us how many boxcars leave, how many car lots leave Jamara, how many boxes in each car, how many different labels, how many grapes in each bunch and all that. Just for the morning. There's some cigarettes here if you're out. What have you got there? Well, I had a quarter.
hemos decidido en la mañana que no vamos a ir cuando que estemos nosotros ya.
Está bueno.
Vamos para México a formar nuestra propia revolución.
Ah, bueno, lo llamaron en Bakersfield.
Ajá, no sé, ¿para qué se va tan lejos?
No quiero decir tan little rancher. Pero
más cerquita es Snake Farm.
¿Ah?
Más cerquita es Snake Farm. Pero ahí tiene sus vidas humanas.
No, pues van a México a entrenar la Army, el ejército.
Pues a lo mejor que nos entrenan primero. Nosotros
traemos. Swift Mexican Justice.
Podemos usar nosotros la Virgen de Guadalupe y los Bocatetas.
¿Seguro?
Es la primera que traíamos.
Yo no sé la Arizona, pero ya no es la. Sí, la gente
de todo depende de cómo la uses.
¿Lo usan en Simon?
No, en Piquetea sí, no. No le cae bien a la gente. A la raza no le cae bien. Porque también se las hace que no está, tú sabes, si no tiene bastante reverencia. O sea. Pero si pones un ahí, un carro enseguida cerquita, tú sabes, en Piqueteo, con un altarcito o algo, entonces sí.
Tenemos
que poder mochar.
I think
Luke
got lost.
Nope. No,
he
got lost last night.
You got lost last night?
Yeah.
Very lost. Out on the West 40. It was really bad. It's still down the staircase and all of a sudden down the plaza and all the doors are locked outside, you know. All the other night. I came up
Ed knows about that.
There's a little girl that's sitting with her sister in the steps. They came up the window and I didn't see her.
Siempre que viva nuestra unión.
about Reagan.
Okay.
But they know it. That's pretty weak.
Oh,
Well, that's a good note to end on. You got to win.
Okay. Jim?
Well, I just don't know that they even know that the basic information that we have, or do they? Maybe they don't. It's just just general information, very common stuff to us that they may not know.
Well, I wrote down the cities in order that that all grapes are shipped out of California. But just understand that this doesn't necessarily mean that that's the same bulk or same quantity that goes to from Giamara. For instance, Giamara is a relatively small shipper of juice grapes, and that's all over now. So that Toronto would probably, even though they get a lot of grapes, at this time of the year, they're probably someplace way down here. Same with Montreal. But as I was saying last night, every year, or last year, there were 26,000 car lots. A car lot is made up of approximately 1,200 lugs, but it depends. You know, sometimes they're 26-pound lugs, sometimes they're 24. But for GMR, they're all 26. I think, isn't that true? They've always been 26-pound lugs, except for the drumming. So that a car lot equals approximately 1,200 lugs of grapes. Now, Giamara ships, each year ships approximately 1,200 car lots and 800 truck lots. No, a piggyback is the same size as a car lot. But a truck lot, they figure, is about two-thirds of a two-thirds the size of a car lot. So that would be about 900 lugs in a truck lot. So I don't have to figure it out, but that would be about 1,500, that'd be about 1,600 total car lots. Well, this year we were able, at this time last year, GMR had shipped about 948, the last time I figured it up was the 24th or 23rd of December. By December 23rd, 1966, GMR had shipped 948 car lots. Now, we don't know how many truck lots. Truck lots aren't kept in the same way as car lots. Car lots, in other words, train cars, are kept very carefully every day and reported to us by the Department of Agriculture. Truck lots aren't reported until the end of the year because they fluctuate so much, and they don't say how much went out in a truck, because sometimes it's only maybe 50 lugs. They don't keep track of it that way. They add it up at the end of the year, how many altogether they shipped by truck. This time, at the same time, December 23rd, 1967, they shipped about 900, I think it was about 945 by rail. Now, the the thing that's very difficult for us to figure is because all along I had assumed it was that they were shipping a lot less this year. What we did was Ken tried the best he could by using the figures of the number of trucks compared to that have come and gone this year, and trying to estimate how many could have come and how many they could have carried. Ken estimated that the number of truck lots is probably quite a bit less this year. Those would be the ones that would go up to, it would go to Denver, and it would go to Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, those kind of shipments. Although we know that some shipments go clear to Atlanta and that way by truck. But the bulk of those truck lots normally go on the West Coast. And very few car lots, very few train cars go on the West Coast. So Ken had figured out, as I said last night, he had figured that it was someplace around 350, which seemed like a lot to me using these figures. And I had figured it had to be a minimum of 100, so because of this check that had gone on, but a maximum of 350. And then Fred, you found, you've got a summary report.
Yeah, I got it from a guy that I used out of some, but his figures differed a little bit from what he figured.
So on December 23rd, 1967, we estimated someplace around 200 car lots. Remember what I'm saying is car lots and not truck lots, which would bring it up to about, it's not adding up right, because it should add up to about 1,600 if we're full amount.
No,
that's right.
Less than 50.
They also say about 50% of the emperors weren't picked this year, or 50% less emperors. So that would account for... I look it up. I think it's about 150 car lots. Usually they ship about 300 car lots of emperors. That would subtract about 150 automatically just because you drop. I think the point of the whole thing is that we can't show a dramatic decrease in the number of grapes in his cold storage. The trainmen say that they can account for 10 car lots, 10 railroad cars that came back. We don't know how many went out and weren't shipped back, but were spoiled, like the one in Chicago, We don't know how many of those are. As far as the cities, in terms of importance, brokers that Ken talked to before the strike started said that the key places for GMR were New York City, Chicago, Philadelphia, and Boston. And that seems to have been borne out. Well, plus Los Angeles, but that's a whole different case. But cities on the East Coast, New York City, and Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston.
Where is he sending these grapes to then, Jim? I mean, I know from what I've been able to find out in Philadelphia that he's not, the grape shipments that were in this time last year, Penn Fruit
had to go to New York to get greens this year, which they've never done. And they've been a very heavily dependent on Jimara. In fact, they started to buy Jimara. And the shipment is supposed to be down, unless the guy's just telling me that, but I don't know.
Well, we've never gotten the kind of work out of the thingman that would really talk about
that. No, I mean from talking to the guy at Penn Fruit.
Yeah.
Oh, so I mean, we don't know. You're assuming
the
diversions are going...
No, we've never been able to get the diversions, really, except that you were able to get them in Toronto.
Yeah, right.
And that's the only place I know of where people really got the diversions.
According to that fact sheet that Ken made up, AMT was supposed to be one of his largest buyers. Did he just find a new market for those, or what?
Well, apparently he did.
Is it possible that he's been selling some of these to other growers? No?
Yeah, the other growers?
Yeah. No, I don't think...
No,
the other growers have a hell of a time getting rid of theirs. It would seem to me.
If he can sell them, he can make a little bit, they might do it, I don't know. Seems to me a lot of stuff in L.A. might have been done that way. Just outright selling tomorrow and stuff.
Wouldn't this make sense?
That's the only alternative to just playing Jamara using their shed, but the paper's on the Jamara damn boxes.
They may have grapes in the other sheds, you know, but I don't think that the growers would be buying grapes. They don't know what to do with what they've got.
Well, then
what's the figure as to how he's selling the grapes? Is he selling them considerably cheaper than
the
market? Well, you people should know a lot better than I because you're at the auction, you know. And,
I think he's selling them cheaper than second. I think he's used more opportunities than anybody else.
That wasn't true at the auction in Chicago. He was always drawing about 5-6 feet, right? Sometimes
up to
$1 more than the other ones. But there's only four at the most at any single time in the auction. You should be selling them, Anton's quality. Occasionally, are all great chains and Heritage together.
Heritage. Yeah. Whose label is Heritage?
Heritage, I think it's.
So there weren't that many Jimara grapes there, huh?
At the auction itself, no. Well, the only time, you know, that when we're talking about Jimara grapes, we're talking that we really know for a fact, like, by his label.
What labels are in sight now?
Para, pound sterling, and prosperity. And Sunview, I believe.
Who is Sunview?
Mark.
No, never mind.
I'll have to check that again at the office because I have that written down.
The first three are right.
Yeah. I know it's Ara.
There's
some great king. There are only about five labels. A lot of pound sterling, he said.
Who's that label?
Seems to have just been invented.
His label, I guess.
Oh, pound sterling?
Yeah, I mean, it's got a name of another party on the box, but it's not even listed in the...
It's not in here.
Now, that they're carrying very heavily.
Pound sterling?
No,
well, that's what... Those are the trucks
they're carrying that very heavily. Also, Sunview.
Sunview, too. Are the labels that are in the Jamara shed now? Okay. Yeah. Jim, and the discrepancy between the reports we're getting on the boycott and... What report we got here from brought up to date? This is on the basis of the last check, right?
Yeah. Well, you see, here's another interesting thing. I figured out sometimes I would figure out for a given period when there was a peak last year. For instance, between I think it was December 6th. No, about December 4th to December 11th last year, there were 51 carlots. That's the time when he was shipping out for Christmas. And on the graph, you know, it goes way up like this, you know, and it goes like this. Well, this year, for the same December 4th to 11th, it was 26. Same period of time. And so, and it was the same thing as Thanksgiving. And for instance, in fact, for the whole month of November, remember, I think it was the time I was visiting, the shipments would go out 0 and 1 and then 0 and then 2, and, you know.
How did all this stuff get out?
But
yeah.
then there's a period of time before, during the month of October, when he shipped a great deal more.
More than he did.
That's for the wine grapes, so.
Well, not necessarily. The Thompson's, for instance. You know, we could go through all the market news service and let's see if I can just find a period of time when. Okay, here's October 1st. Well, September 29th, Edison 11. Edison 10 on the 30th, and 6 on the 1st. 12 on the 2nd. 11 on the 3rd. 6 on the 5th.
That's besides the
These are all trains. This train shipments. That's all it is. 10 on the 6th. Now, let me just skip over to November now. November 1st, Edison 1. 2nd, Edison 1. 3rd, nothing. The 4th, Edison 1. The 5th, nothing. The 7th, Edison 1. The 8th, Edison 4. 9 through 12, let's see, the 9th, Edison 2. 10th, nothing, 11th, 1. Anyway, this is the way it went all through November.
Well,
and this was the time when I was saying, you know, we're just really squeezing them down.
Well, in November we were, but in October we had lost.
Yeah,
but then in November.
We weren't following the train.
We really hadn't
took that long.
I don't think the boycott was really effective until around the 1st of November. Yeah. And I thought, you know, that at that time I thought, well, we're really going to get them down. Because you look at the graph, and at those same dates, a year ago, they were shipping 6, 7 a day. And here it was 1 a day. But what had happened, during the month of October, he had shipped sometimes 10, 11, when normally he'd be shipping higher. Yeah.
So then in November, the total number of car lines between this year and last year, sometime in November, must have been at least the same and maybe greater if he shipped out more in October. This year than he did last year.
Yeah, but he shipped out more in October.
Yeah.
But also, isn't he usually shipping emperors in November, and they didn't ship emperors this year?
Well, in late November.
Oh, late November.
Yeah.
It seems it took that long to gain momentum.
And actually, if you follow it right through, there's even, you see that carry over into this this period of time for Christmas. He was shipping 50% at Christmas. And, you know, just my error. I should have figured up the whole amount going back from the first shipment he made. But I really didn't pay too much attention until around November 1st to these shipments, and I was adding them up along then. And I, you know, that's... But
I mean, you're adding
about October.
By the month or by
mm-hmm.
certain periods without taking the total.
Yeah. But the month of October was something else. It was... Yeah, he must have seen what was coming and just unloaded a tremendous amount of it. Plus, in fact, that's when he started using all the other labels.
But it was seeming
yeah.
like almost 2 months for the boycott to gain enough on
yeah. that. We weren't even touching those other labels.
Columbine, which we didn't care about until a little bit later. And a couple of other labels.
found out we're on the boycott list. We're selling 2 pounds for 29 cents. Normally up in Seattle they sell 1 pound for about 26 cents. And the stuff was on special. You might have dumped some stuff.
Well, the discrepancy in price on a retail level is tremendous, you know. Like in Gristiti's in New York, which is a very high priced chain, we're selling the same grapes are going for 39 cents a pound and another chain are going for 19 cents a pound.
Well, that's because Christmas another produce item is higher than that.
Everybody has.
Yeah.
Now, Jim, I remember some time back there were reports that over in, I think one of the papers that Lucille picked up at the auction in Chicago, it had a Jamar shipment out of some other point.
Oh, yeah. All of... everything that came into the auction in New York City, even though it was the car number that left from Edison and threw it, you know, I mean, we had that from visual knowledge. It said arrived, let's say, Royal K, Ara, and Great King Ducor.
Yeah, every
everything said Ducor, but the car number.
All the grapes that came from the Delano area said had the point of origin Ducor.
Everyone.
What's
that? Because that wouldn't show up on here.
That's very interesting. I didn't know that because the two shipments, the shipments have been coming into Philadelphia, not recently, but when I first got there, were from Ducor. I didn't know that, but that's what was happening.
Okay. But the grapes were from the Edison shed because the car...
Well, it showed on the train clip thing at Ducor. When the guy called me, the point of origin showed it.
Well, that's probably where maybe they say that because that's where the grapes were grown.
What I'm saying is, would it be possible that he's shipping from other points other than...
Well, the only place in Ducor is Divisage.
Yeah.
And we're sure he never shipped from there.
Do you know anything about Jasmine? Is that name Jasmine?
Well, it's
Jasmine.
Further
it's
south. It's right down below Keratin.
Oh. Well, they've been... There's a train.
I think the only thing that we would really don't know is the shipments to the market in Los Angeles. We haven't had a very effective truck following operation.
No. One thing I want to get this thing on Jasmine. Is that a rail siding?
It is a rail siding.
Okay, well we know of at least one truck or two trucks carefully that picked up stuff that was unloaded from boxcars.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. We thought it was BS at first and then, you know. Irene Terrazas was in Delano and she went over there.
Unless they brought the boxcars and loaded them into trucks?
Or they, you know, like Jim said last night, they've been throwing it in boxcars, you know, up there maybe, and then they put them for the boxcars in the trucks and they're ready to ship them out to the
You think the boxcars for a cold store?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that,
but...
That's a great deal.
I think it'd be very expensive tying up a car, you know.
But according to the drivers in LA, you know, they get them all over
the place. Also, it's possible that say that that the buyers that the trucks pick up grapes from different growers.
Yeah, well, they come in part what they call portions. You know, the front, like the halfway will start in Fresno, and pick up some, you know, some stuff up there, and then they'll hit on, you know, maybe pick up some beverages, and then the last part they'll pick up tomorrow or San Juan, what have you.
Well, I think if we're going to generalize about, you know, using the figures, either something happened to his market or else boycott is very effective starting November 1st, from that time on. But before then, the boycott, there's no way we can measure any effect of it. Now, what I'd like, I don't remember, but I'd like to figure out when people feel they started being effective in the city. When did we start getting any cooperation? Like, let's take New York City. When did you get there, John?
Second week of September.
Before that time, all we could really account for was A&P.
Yeah, I understand. It was a similar agreement with Grand Union. With Grand Union, you didn't seem to know about it.
But anyway, A&P and Grand Union. But around the 1st of October,
well, we started... I would say up until the 1st of October, you know, it was the fruit up fell off. And then into October, started to get the change. I'd say second week of October. Third week of October.
Philadelphia, I would say the end of November. San Francisco and Oakland, what was the case there? When did they stop handling the grapes?
That was when they were 15. December 15th, when we stopped loading the grapes.
How about Boston? When did you get there, Marco?
I don't remember the month. I didn't even know the month.
How long ago was
it? It was about a month and a half on there.
That's right.
I think it was November.
Terry went back to school about the 8th, I think. October 15th.
Not the job out there.
You went there maybe November 3rd or 6th.
No, before I went there? About a month and a half ago.
No, I think it's November 3rd when you went up there.
About November
15th? You see, I didn't even know that much myself.
How about Detroit? When did you feel like things really got up?
August the 23rd.
Oh, you went that early?
Well, I arrived there August the 17th at Detroit.
And you think shipments stopped coming in there?
Yes.
By the 1st of September?
Yes.
Cleveland, not until end of November?
No, in Cleveland, we haven't stopped them at the terminal. You know what I mean? There's, in other words, there's four buyers there that we haven't been able to stop.
December, and Seattle?
Middle of October.
How about Vancouver? Yeah, they're... No. There are other cities. Denver was when?
About the middle of November, about 15.
So, actually, around the 1st of November, it just was about the time when
Does that coincide with the decrease?
Starting the 1st of November, everything dropped from about 7, 8, 10 a day down to 1 and 2.
How does that compare to last year?
Well, it normally is about, an average of about 5 or 6 instead of, but in other words, if you had a graph, it would be, it goes way up like this, for the Thompson, and they just ship them right out of, they don't even have any cold storage in Prospero, and they ship every day, 26 a day sometimes. That's all through September, and then October, normally it starts like this, and then it just keeps going like this, and then with a few peaks for Thanksgiving. But this year, that'd be the normal way. This year, it went more like this, and then it'd be a few bad days, and then it'd go up like this. And then when it came to November, it just went like this. And whereas it should have, you know, just kept right on. And then for Christmas this year, it should have gone like this.
Didn't that?
And instead it went about like this.
But it was this whole month of October that they really unloaded. Almost, in many cases, twice a day as much as normal.
Oh, then one question on these things. You have all of these from last year. You can compare these and everything. There's several different ones. One is about the wholesale market. I forgot about saying that.
Yeah.
You have all those different ones.
Well, this is the only one that's relevant as far as Umar's shipments are concerned.
Yeah,
well, what I've received, that's the difference. Which, you know, you never know.
Currently, I don't have the one from last year, so I don't know, but currently, right now, the demand is real small on the, you know, on the grapes. And if it's true of last year and the year before.
Was this in general a bad year for grapes?
The growing season wasn't as good, and the quality wasn't as good. I mean, the yield wasn't as good. And it was a little better than last year, which is really bad. And 65 was the best year. That was a bumper crop year.
So was the quality bad this year as opposed to last year?
I don't know. Yeah, I think so. I think the quality was worse this year because I remember some reports from Lucas and some of the other ranchers that were having difficulty selling the grapes.
This was what we heard pretty consistently from the brokers.
Yeah.
The quality was
worse. They had a lot of rot because the weather, you know, the came later on than usual, you know. And so they, you know, the...
the October shipments were... Do you know basically
Jamar's labels
or the other
labels? No, we just know that Carla left. Can't see what the
When did they finish the conference?
October is when they started with the other labels. Because I remember when I first went into Toronto, it was Ara mostly, and not so much Grape King, mostly Ara. And then it started switching over to Sunview, was the big one that started.
I don't think we really caught on to the label thing until pretty late in the game.
I think if we had hit all those other labels as hard as we were hitting our...
Didn't we know from the beginning that he was using at least 20 or 30 labels? Yeah, but we, you know, we weren't publicizing them. And we weren't asking people... we just weren't getting out to the terminals. You know, we were looking for Ara, and even though we knew of those labels, people were still looking for Ara and
Jen Pound. Why is it possible to get routing and destination and the consignee on some cars but not all?
Yeah.
That's very valuable.
Yeah. What we can get on every car is the consignee. Not the consignee, the city. And almost every one of them is the same. It's GMR, Kansas City. So occasionally, they'll send one direct to Philadelphia, and we'll get that information.
We got it.
But many cases, for instance, we knew there were a number going to Montreal. It said they were going to Montreal. People went up to Montreal, they checked. You got information from the train. Who was it?
Terry.
Tony had pretty good contact with the trainmen up there, and they said, yes, these were originally consigned to Montreal, but they've been sent to New York City instead.
Yeah. I think this is, they probably went to Victor Joseph, and Edmund Stoller and Victor Joseph's job together sold it. And a lot of stuff is trucked, you know. I guess that's just Marion in Montreal.
Yeah.
It was trucked from New York up to Montreal.
So that's sort of true on something that I was called and told that there were four cartels coming up. I think I talked to Landy about it, Chicago, through the Santa Fe. So I have a chairman from the local yard that said he would help me as much as he could. But if out of these four, only one ever came into the yard, and it was sent to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it seems to me that we're blaming Jamar for a lot of deception that he's not really guilty of. For instance, on the business of the cars being consigned to GMR in Kansas City, we were, I think in New York at least, we were assuming he was doing this for the purpose of,
trying to keep it out of our hands on trying to make sure we didn't get to the car before it got to where it was going. But apparently this was done anyway.
No. It wasn't done
because,
until October 3rd.
It was?
No. And I sent that newsletter out, you know, that listed all the people that had received shipments up to October 3rd, and then whenever there was a consignment, if it wasn't Giamara, Giamara, it was either to Gilbert Bain or Andrews or Victor Joseph Corbin.
And the impression somebody was talking about it last night, I don't remember who it was, and the impression I got was this was a logical way to route the car if it was going to be sold on a rail.
No.
If you know it's going to be sold lease, and you're only going to, your immediate destination is Kansas City. You assume by the time it gets to Kansas City, you're going to have a buyer.
But you see, what was happening was that before it was consigned directly, you see, most of these large chains like A&T and Stop and Shop, they have buyers
right
here on the West Coast. And these guys were buying cars, and apparently what was happening, they were buying cars, and they could be on the rail, and then they get an agreement. We get an agreement with some local area, you know, say it would cover Detroit. And here's this chain would be stuck with it. And we'd say, if you receive those, you know, we're going to ticket you. Well, they didn't have any choice but to say, sorry, I can't accept it. So Giamara was not stopped confining it directly to any chain and started confining it only to these agents. Who then began to use it like rolling stock, you know, they try to sell it once on the rail. And maybe that turned out to be a more effective way, except that it cost Giamara more to do this, because that way he's working through somebody who's taking a commission on it rather than selling it direct.
What Andrew Brothers told Andy and I in Detroit was that he would get, say, two cars. Well, that's that he was only able to sell half a car less. The others would go maybe farther on east, and then they would stop at this city, and maybe they could sell one more, and then, you know, they'd keep on going for a while or so.
Did we ever find out to what extent, remember when Pagliaroli and, or whatever his name is, and Giamara both shipped on the same flat car? In two piggybacks. Now, I don't know. It's very hard to track that down. But really, the shipper was also Giamara, and the consignee was also Rosengarten. And we just found this out because you people called and told us, alerted us on the number. But really, he could do that. Every time he had a piggyback, he could put the other piggyback, it'd be somebody else's, and he could send out, you know. And we never know. We'd never be able to track it down.
Here's where all the shipping is. You already got this, so I'll just remind you of it. During the month of August, the following were receivers of Giamara Grace: Central Wholesale of Syracuse, Victor Joseph, Jersey City, Andrews Brothers, Detroit, Wakefern Foods, South Kearney, Savino Produce, Buffalo, Food Fair, Miami, United Brokers, Portland, Victor Joseph, Boston, Kroger's in Ohio, Woodlawn, Ohio, Woodlawn, Ohio, and other cities, Charleston, West Virginia, Nashville, Great A&P in Toronto, Montreal, Atlanta, Georgia, Altoona, Pennsylvania, Richmond, and Virginia, Conestraro Produce of Syracuse, National Food Stores of Milwaukee, Porcheson, LaRose Limited, Montreal, Stop and Shop, Boston, Dominion, Toronto, Ludlow's, Buffalo, First National, Somerville, Mississippi, Acme Market, Philadelphia, Weingarten, Houston, Food Fair, Jersey City, Delaware Valley Fruit, Philadelphia, Penn Fruit, Philadelphia, First National, Hartford, Connecticut, Caruso, Albany, National Tea, Chicago, First National, Portland, Maine, yeah. Portland Brokerage, Portland, Maine, Baylog Produce, Utica, New York. During the month of September, the only ones that the train company could find was Colato, Cacciatore of Montreal, Caledonia of Toronto, Rochino, Toronto, Fred Mordane of Montreal, which were probably all wine grapes. And then everything else was shipped to Victor Joseph or Balsamo or Andrew Brothers,
And then starting and on October 1st and 2nd, Calato and Mutual Fruit received shipments. Then after the 3rd, all grapes shipped by GMR were handled by Gilpin Bain, Victor Joseph, Baltimore, and the Andrew Brothers. Everything that they could find at consignee for was to those four. And then never again did it go to Kroger, directly to Kroger, or anything like that. It was always consigned to one.
On that list, Jim, the name of the company does not necessarily coincide with the town. For instance, Wakefern and South Kearney. Wakefern is the same as ShopRite. They're not in South Kearney, but South Kearney would mean, in this case, it's the Pennsylvania Railroad piggyback yard, and that's where it's transferred to the railroad, and apparently that's where Wakefern would take responsibility for it, where they would pick it up.
Would that feed into New York?
Well, no. Well, it's in the New York area, you know, but their warehouse is in Linden, so we followed it to Linden when it went to Kimberly. When the tractor broke down and picked it up, picked it to Linden.
But then it would be distributed to all the different local stores.
Yeah, right. Before the New York area.
Yeah. I have a theory on regard to, Andrew Brothers and others that seem to me, in our case, Cleveland, Detroit, although Andrew Brothers and all the ones in Detroit were speaking to handle, although Andrew Brothers continued, I also get the impression that he was consigned Carlos, and he might have been converting these to, let's say, Cleveland. Using Andrew Brothers might be using Cleveland as his market, the other brokers. Do you think that?
I believe that's very possible. That's what I've been trying to say here, that these people are using this kind of strategy to fool us. They're using this kind of strategy.
What's the feasibility of a boxcar just being consigned, and then it makes a random stop, say, in Mineola, Kansas, and transferred into a truck, and then takes it?
That's an awful expensive process.
Yeah, I don't think so.
They're expensive.
I think so, yes. It'll be, and then the handling, you can't handle grapes too many times. You'd have to be...
I don't think it's feasible with a boxcar, because it would mean handling the whole shipment, but I think with a piggyback, it might be feasible. And we were thinking that after they knew that we were in the yard, the Secaucus and the Erie Lackawanna yard, why it's very possible that a lot of stuff was getting by after that. Very possible that what they did was unload the piggybacks at any division point along the line, because you don't have to rehandle the whole shipment.
It'll cost them some money. You have to have drivers.
That's not a great thing.
Sure it is.
Oh, yeah.
That's the whole reason why they have piggybacks
to
begin with.
Getting a great thing,
but I think the most important thing about the use of the agent is that I don't know what percentage, but growers and receivers don't like to use agents because they make a commission.
Right.
And this is why agents are becoming, auctions are, becoming obsolete, because they like to ship directly to the chain market, point to point, no stops or anything in between.
Okay, let's, do you have any more specific thing on the, rails or the public speaking of now?
Then, in other words, for 2 months, and now using eight.
No, not in Philadelphia. They're not. They're directly consigned to. We know one that was directly consigned to Acme, and we know Penn Fruit is buying directly. Well, they told me they were.
But I think when it leaves, I think that the person who consigned it, I think that the originator of that is not the Amara any longer. It's probably Victor Joseph.
I see.
Or
okay. Do you have anything else? Okay, I think we're just sort of like it's bogging down. Let's see if we can get more specific. What is the type of information that you need that we haven't been able to get?
Rail.
Everything.
Rail.
Specifically, this one, so it's going to take. Specific things that we need and we're not getting.
And I would like to know why, too. Maybe
okay, maybe we can talk about why we need it, Because we can ask for a lot of information we really couldn't use,
Well, somebody sends you a piece of paper that says on such and such a date, car number, less Delano. Now, that's sent to me in Philadelphia. Now, it's very, very difficult to do anything with that. first of all, what usually happens is once you get your railroad contact, they eventually find out. The easiest way is not to see if they can find those particular cars. What's the much, much easier thing for them to do, because of three changes of shifts and the whole bit, they say, who are you interested in? Whose name? You want Jimara. So they can find Jimara much, much easier. Much, much easier. And so, and then never have they ever found, you know, I've had it checked out, every single one in Philadelphia, and only one of those cars did they ever find, and that was the one that you had already told me, and I alerted him that it was probably Rosengarten, and he checked that out. So now what they're doing is, I said, look, just check Acme, Penfruit, and Rosengarten for me. Now the thing is, they can do that, but then if all of a sudden he gets sneaky and starts going some other route, then we're in trouble again, you know?
So you don't need the car number.
Well, I'll tell you, the only time car numbers ever helped me is when you sent me a whole big list, and I just drove all over Montreal, and I drove all over Toronto until I found them. And I did find them, but it took me 2 days to do it. But, I mean, that's the way to do it. But I had to look, actually, and try to find that car number myself.
And the railroad people, you go by the numbers of the car?
Well, when I call the railroad people, but see, the thing about that, you can call tracing. I got by with that two or three times. But you reach a point of diminishing returns with that, you know. You call up as if you have a perfect right to know exactly where that is. Then they start wanting to know things like, who are you, you know, and things like that. They also want to know who the consignee is. Now, I sneaked out of that one in Montreal by saying that I was trying to find out who the consignee was. But they expect you to already know that. If you know the consignee, if you don't even have to know the shipper. If you know the consignee and the car number, they can tell you exactly where that car is. In fact,
we have a guy just calling, if it was Jamara on the other end.
But see, we never know who the consignee is, Caesar. That's the problem.
Well, just give them all those names, you know. Joseph and all those guys.
Well, I don't know how they find it out, but they know. See, the thing is, they know that Acme goes out to Ingleside. They know if it's Acme, they look out for Ingleside for that. They know that if it's Rosengarten, they look for stall 83. They know, so that's how they can narrow it down. Otherwise,
well, maybe
they've got to look for every single place.
Maybe we'll have to set up our own network from the West Coast all the way to the East Coast. Maybe that's what we have to do.
How can you do that?
I don't know. Because we've never been able to get the information that we want. And we're going to be fooling around with boycotts. It seems to me that I don't think it would be that expensive. You know, once we get the hang of it, one guy at key railroad centers, you know, not in the yard, but before you get into the yard where you can see them, you know. I think they have a place in Barstow where a guy with a pair of binoculars on his room, you know, opens the window.
And a needle.
And is it needles? Someplace they can just open the window, open the shade, you know, and just get the binoculars.
Well, you know, even if you could just tell us what city, you know,
I don't think they do
say you turn 18. If you can give us an idea of whether they're coming to Philadelphia or not, you know.
But see,
do that.
We don't know that. That's the...
Well, there's any one of a dozen ways on stuff can be routed between, you know, between here and the East Coast.
Yeah. Well, I still don't know why you want the number.
The number?
Yeah.
Because they use it for tracing. They use it for tracing. And incidentally, a flat car number is not enough. If there's piggybacks on it, you need all three numbers. And the problem, you need both piggybacks.
Can we get those numbers?
Oh, yeah. But it's still not clear to me why you want the number. What are you going to do with the number?
For tracing.
Yeah, but you said you can only use that maybe twice.
No, if you don't know the consignee. If you know the consignee, you can use it every single time.
Okay, but you don't know the... we're not going to be able to tell you the consignee every time. But you still want the numbers, whether or not they're useful or not in tracing.
Well, Joel,
now why?
Why?
Why do you want the number?
If you don't know
because if you really get desperate, you can get in your little car and drive around and see if you can find the bloody thing, you know? At least you know. At least you've got
something. And you were able to find them?
Yeah, that's how I found the 7-inch.
Could the problem be that not many of you went around looking for them?
I found them in Montreal. That's the only way I found them in Montreal. I looked on that map and I looked at
how many of you went to the yard looking for cars and numbers? What's it? How many found them?
I found lots of them.
You found a lot of them?
Mm-hmm. I did too.
You did too?
We found some cars, and then we went to the office, he got there in the room, and the guy, he told us, after the car gets into the yard, he tell us who they going to, you know, who's the broker, who's the buyer of the car. We had a problem with that.
Well, after you found yours, what did you do?
Well, Fortunately, in Toronto, they still had the little white card on it, and it said right on there. It showed the, you know, the little white card stuck right in the sign, and it said Shipper Jumara Company, and it had the name Culotta or something like that, or Malagier, whoever it was. Well, then we picketed it.
Oh.
Now, in Montreal,
when did they put that card on, you know?
Pardon me?
When did they put that card on?
I've
never seen one.
Yeah, I
put that on in L.A.
I've never seen it in Philadelphia.
On the
press, I've never seen it in Philadelphia. It might be.
It might be
I don't know.
Yeah, but this one, Jamar, I was using another thing. Potatoes that I was looking at one time. I was talking to one friend of mine, one guy in his friends, you know how they do it. And they stick those things on when they come through there.
Yeah,
and
then they don't
leave. We know something.
They don't leave with those things on.
Something else I did when I found out is, I went down, I did this in Philadelphia too, and I just drove down to the B&O yard, and I saw our grapes on his boxcar. There wasn't anything on the side, and so I just went up and talked to the guy, got the guy talking, and he told me exactly who was buying them and where they came from and how many he bought and the whole bit. Did the same thing over in Montreal, and he said, well, that's how I found Christian LaRose. I would never have known about that. And he told me exactly where the place was. It was an out-of-the-way spot, and so I found it, and I went down there, and I found the grid.
Yeah, well, in each railroad yard, first you have the clerk, you know, he knows what's going on. But if you can't get to him, you get to the conductor, because he sold the train.
Well, these cars were actually, I was lucky, they were being unloaded.
Yeah.
And there was a truck there, too, so I could get the truck.
Will somebody draw a picture of a train and tell me who all these people are? Okay, who's the clerk? Who's the conductor? Where is the conductor? What does he know? Who is the trainman?
The clerk gets all the papers. The conductor gets the orders. The conductor gives the orders to the trainman. The trainman is the guy that walks around the lights, right? He'll train all over the place.
The yard man.
Switchman. A trainman is one that, you know, knows exactly where all the cars are.
Like Dutch Royer, in other words.
Okay. All right, the clerk is inside the office, right? It's all the paperwork. He passes whatever has to be done to the conductor for a particular area, or a particular train, whatever the situation is. The conductor, breaks up the train or says, he's got a yard here with 10 different warehouses. This one goes here, this one goes here, this one goes here. Trainman takes it over there.
And they get a computer printout sheet.
No, I think trainman is just catch-all phrase. You know, everybody in the train is.
Oh no, that's a trainman is the guy that has the lantern that places.
No, that's a switchman.
No,
because they're all in the railway. In some areas of the country, they're organized by the switchman's union. In some areas, they're organized by the train union.
Well,
in our case, the trainman.
Every
so
some areas,
the
catch-all phrase. In some places,
well, the clerk is always the one. The brother of the clerk is the one.
What happened to the fireman?
Firemen are on the train.
But see, what it boils down to, you have to end up getting the person on every carload of grapes that drops in.
I think we're not really getting any place. Do you get the feeling we're just sort of rambling on? I do. Yeah. How do we get out of
So that's the frustrating thing when you're in a place and you know that the really important information you have to get is on the rail shipment. And maybe we're finding the same frustration right here, because I know what it can do when you have that information. And when you have that information, you've got it validated. You know right who to go to over there. And you say, when this guy says to you, young lady,
how are we
going to
get the information? Okay. We're
going to get it from either go to the train yard.
We're going to get it from the train, because we went up to Dennis, the big boy, you know.
No, that's the clerk, right?
Yeah, and they're the ones that have the information. And we may have just do with help, and blah, 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 and we want to help. And Mimi sent word to him, and he got us Fanny out of the meeting and came and met with us. And he said, we got the word from upstairs. We got to help you guys. This is what we're going to do. But, they want the numbers of the piggybacks and the numbers of the flat cars. They want the numbers of the refrigerated cars. And
that's really funny.
And they want the company, the no, the no.
the company of the owner of the car owner, PFE or Santa Fe, whatever they call it.
Later on, I got a call from Ed Hayes saying he got a call from Ocaro saying, don't send anyone, he's gone, he can't do anything. Don't even send us any letters for a while. Don't even bother. That's the guy I gave you.
Well, I got hold of him. You got hold of him. He said, he didn't know me. I was going to check with you. Check me out.
And what he did was say, oh, I'm being bothered too much. Don't send me any more. Yeah, don't bother me.
So you're a little upset about my calling. Well,
that's that.
A hell of a lot of our effort to getting all unions, not to buy great, you know. And the liberals, too. Remember, I got paying attention to a lot of them, but, you know, sorry, that kind of thing. All churches, you know, they're not going to buy any grace. All unions aren't going to buy any grace. The Negroes aren't going to buy any grace. The Puerto Ricans aren't going to buy any grace, and all this sort of thing. In connection with, you know, what other ideas you have for next year. I'm just thinking about next year.
Yeah, well, we have one great problem. One legal problem is that we say, no, don't buy any grace, and we have DiGiorgio and the fat man over there.
Who is
the fan?
Goldberg.
And in New York City, the Puerto Ricans, I think it would make a lot of hay, you know, everything, and not to buy grapes. Mm-hmm. But,
That's what we said. When the list got out of hand, we can't tell you not to buy any grapes, but maybe that's the one single thing you can do for the farmers if you really give a damn about it. You don't buy any California grapes, too.
But I think that even before that, the problem that we've got is, why are we trying to place a shipment of the Georgia on the record? See what happens. And maybe get some from there we can develop some ideas. This is, this is the West, in case you don't know. Well, look at it, like a tagging chain.
Rosemont.
Okay, what happens there?
It's community diverted up toward Portland in that direction, Vancouver, or up. It's diverted toward Salt Lake City.
Do you think there's help or
yes?
Okay. I need somebody can draw better and see better than I can. Can you read that? Mm-hmm. It can be diverted west,
It can go north to Portland. And, you know, any Portland on the northwest.
Now, if it goes here, are there any other directions, yards, or any other
lines? Yeah, there are places where you could be
diverted to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, or,
going here?
After they got up, they went like this, they got up to Portland, then it could be diverted to Spokane, and from Spokane it could be diverted to Coeur d'Alene.
But it's not being easy, but it's all northwest.
In order to get to here, it has to be diverted here.
So there's the key area.
Yeah, that's near Sacramento.
Oh, it's still in California.
Now, what's the next one?
Ogden.
Utah?
What's the next one?
Nothing until you get to Omaha. But it doesn't go through Kansas City, really.
Kansas City down here, right?
Yep.
We're going to take that one later. We're going to take this is the 7th Pacific here.
Yeah. But
Dodge is the 7th Pacific.
That's the main route. That's the trunk.
That's the main route.
Yeah. But if they want something to go to Kansas City or south, it'd go through Kansas City. But otherwise, it doesn't. It's just like Roseville is just a small place, but it's a train center.
That
line that runs through Omaha is the Pacific,
the line
that
they drop on from Kansas
City.
What's after
Omaha? Chicago.
The next item?
Yeah.
Nice. Then all hell breaks loose, right?
It just goes up to Detroit,
Toronto,
any direction you
want
to go from there.
But we know that if it goes up to here, then it can only go to certain places. We'll take that up later.
Yeah, but the other thing, we know that, like, for instance, I know that there are two railroads that you have to be concerned with.
Well, let's take California first, huh? Now, then we have the other one here.
I prefer a ship like
Santa Fe. Yeah.
I do too. I think mail that's true, but...
Ogden, and they, if they really wanted to confuse it, according to the Charles, that thing. Anyway, they brought it up in the Navy. I'm believe that happened to Real. It just makes things worse for the world. But that's the way we told the Texas to use the. I go to General Real and then Crown. Yeah, Crown, yeah, and that way. Okay. So, how far is Tennessee from here?
From where we are right now?
35. How long would it take to go to the railroad station and just pick up the map? So, this map are every line in the country there. I don't know what we're talking about, either. Probably 6 miles. Yeah. Get down, Michael. Port Lambert. Port Lambert. Yeah. Will you send someone to go get it? If it's important to find out where the cars are going for the people boycotting, if we're going to have a mobile force up back there, then it's important to station men, you know, along these lengths, and then check the cars. But we're not hearing anything from the railroad. No use taking the numbers. Why are we taking numbers and having all that, you know? We've got how many people? How many people are in the Jamaica, as my father
said?
Probably about 12, 15 people. 12, 15 people, you know? Imagine all that expense and time. See, we haven't been able to do anything with
the
numbers so far, we haven't.
Well, I don't know.
At least we haven't been able to do that much when we get to the people on the East Coast taking boycotting. Oh, to identify
the
cars, though. You have to have the numbers, yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that if we haven't done that much. And what we do is we just leave a couple of guys there. It's thinking, you know, we forget about numbers and we send everybody to New York and try to get those guys up there. Unless we, together with that, then we, you know, we really have our system, you know.
Now the numbers can't be system. Well, how important is it to have this kind of system if we're going to try to blitz some of these big guys like Joseph?
Yeah, I think it's important to know what they're going to do with the information when they get it.
Well,
okay.
But if you don't need it.
If you're
going to
boycott, if you're going to just hit Victor Joseph and hit the agent, then I don't think this is very necessary. If you're going to try to get right to the great thing,
yeah, but are we going to have time to do all that? If we're going in to try and break one guy, we're going to have time to do for all these other questions.
Yeah, but the thing is, if he's going to put pressure on this guy, and then...
Yeah, they're going to start moving around.
Yeah, then they're going to switch to somebody else, and you're going to know where the great guy. I think you have to know where the great
guy. See, the moment... In 30 days, how much time are you going to have to, you know, be switching all over?
It'll take 30 days, just the same. Well, we've got quite a bit set up. But if we give it some priority, we can set it up very quickly. We have good men to do it. We don't have that many... guys that can think for themselves and be able to, you know. One guy by himself can do this thing, and, you know. Say if it's a Roseville 1, Ogden 1, Omaha, we've got three guys there. Maybe we have another three in the Santa Fe, and then in Chicago we have another group watching the rails, you know. So then, once everything comes in Chicago,
then
we're in trouble.
Well, I think you can have.
We have to narrow it down. But it costs about $5 to make each one,
each transmitter.
Now, we can retrieve them back there, and then we got to get the receiver. The receiver is just a small radio receiver. You hook the transmitter, and it's, you know, when you're within...
Like a Dagger kind of thing?
Just a couple of miles, it starts, you know, you receive the transmission from the small transmitter.
I think we're going to go through it, I think something like that would be essential, you know, because even going transmitted for a mile and a half to 2 miles, because when you get into one of those yards back east,
There's a couple thousand cars in one of the yards. You know, and you walk around looking for special kinds of boxcars, like a story in St. Louis that nobody ever knows about. You take a picture of it. You just have a camera on you. You're just wondering.
You're a trainologist.
Yeah.
They don't even know
anything.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He'll get on a well-fired camera, half of one. He'll set it up on a time explosion and has electric motor. The train will go by, say, 75 miles an hour, and he makes a calculation of how fast it's going, and he just sets the machine going, click, 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 click. And he takes the batch, and 15 minutes he has to develop it, and he gets every car in them.
That's
the
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did
you
wait
till the train?
No. Now,
we can get into the other stuff. Let's see if we can get this. If we can find out. We don't know that much about Tennessee, do we?
Well, I can tell you some of the stuff about
Tennessee. Have you looked it up, Patrick?
No.
Well, you know, it's funny to get to right
there. There is a big junction point about 30 miles from Albuquerque. And this is where a lot of the switching around takes place. Well,
Before we start spending some time on this, let's see if we can decide whether we really need this or not.
Yeah, I want to ask a question.
Yeah,
getting back to my original point. Say we decided on Joseph. And say we hurt him so much that he's going to have to divert. You know, I mean, so they start diverting. And then, say they divert to 10 other places. How many of those 10 other places are we going to be able to go to work on anyway within a short period of time? Even if we know where they diverted to. First of all, we have to find out where they diverted to.
I think we only have time for nerve warfare.
That's all I think. And making a big, spectacular, bloody mess out of, you know, and well, if they divert, they divert. And then we go to another place and hurt him, and then they divert, and then we go to another place, and so forth. I don't think we're really going to get the grace.
I think it's just going to take a lot of time to me, anyway. If they were to go after, you know, like Joseph and Son and all those things, if we only have a month, this will get set up for the next time. You know?
Well, we can get somebody else working on this.
Yeah, but maybe
we can use them now.
There are people in our organization that know exactly everything about the train. They're not hearing
Yeah, but what if the same thing happened already and you think you got all these commitments, you know? And all the guy said, sure, you know, I won't buy the grace and he sends Shemara a telegram and he calls him on the phone. And then really what he's doing is he's in the back room somewhere else making a deal.
Yeah.
So then we don't know where the place is.
I
know what you mean. I just
don't
know where you are and if you know where the place
is.
But how
are
you going to get
it?
I think there's a difference. The guy, Colato, who calls up and says, Johnny, he's got a priest here.
Yes.
That guy, when you bug him so much that he calls up that way, that kind of...
But the thing is,
that's the kind of person you really want to bug.
But the thing is, I knew exactly whether or not Salvador could buy any more grapes.
No, but we know already. We know that there are four agents who are long-time, old-time buddies. And those four agents, you know, we ought to make it hell for them.
No, I agree with
even
that.
Even if they don't get any grapes, make it hell for them. Just because you're a friend of GMI, you're going to make it hell for them.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question. What happens if we're giving Joseph the business, and at the same time we know that, like tomorrow morning it's going to be a couple of cars there?
We're going to be giving him the whole force that we can get anyway. Aren't we?
Well, yes, but if I were doing it, it seemed to me that I would feel kind of comfortable to know where the grapes were.
Yeah, if you know where they are.
Did he have 25 guys? The market, you're going to be hitting the market, it seems to me, you know, the market's from 5 in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock, to about 9 o'clock, and it's right?
Yeah,
three to seven.
And really, 3 o'clock they open, but they don't get the buyers don't really come there until about 6. They start at 5, from 5 to about 9, you know? And then you've got the 20 guys, what do you do with them the rest of the time? It seems to me, you know, that they could be
up around his office.
Right. Or they could be out talking to two of the other guys out at the food terminal. They could be out talking to stores. If you find out one guy that Victor Joseph is selling to, you go bug that guy's information. You know, when I talked to Delaware Valley Produce, he's a broker, that guy was really shook up by the fact that I knew what the hell I was talking about. I knew the exact number of that car. He was really worried. He said, how did you know? How did you find out? And I said, I have ways of finding out. And it really shook him up. He had to go into his records, and I said, that's black car number, da 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 da, and that was confined to, and I want to know what the heck's going on here. You promised me you weren't, you know, da 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 da. Yeah, those guys understand that kind of thing. The same thing happened in King Toronto. When they say to me, I didn't buy any grapes, and I said, I have information to show that this car number left the other since 1977 today. That guy can't die down. He can't. You can prove it. You got the information right there. I think that, and what's Victor Joseph? If Victor Joseph, so we go up there and we scare him and, you know, things like that. If we don't really know his market, you know, I think we're blocking him. I think he's going to find it out very, very quickly that we don't know.
I mean, the large clothes are not. Joseph is just resisting for whatever reasons he may have, but not really handling that much grapes.
No, Peter, if he's not handling that much grapes, then we're winning, because they've got to sell grapes in New York City. I don't think you can just discount 15-20% of the national market and say, I just won't sell grapes in New York City.
Well, maybe
there's only certain ways they can do it, and that's our point. Now, you're going to know if it comes in.
Are we going to know?
Instead of that, you say, don't buy anything from Victor Joseph, then you can get a target.
Yeah, I think we'd be for a parallel thing or something that goes along with it. I think it's too late this year. And because I think it needs to be built up. I don't agree that we should start with a parade. I think we should build up to that parade with a hell of a lot of work on us. You know, all the groups that we can count on for, you know, sympathy, support, and so forth, getting them gradually all souped up and winding up in a big climax just like a parade.
About
halfway through the season. Yeah, well. Yeah. Well,
which would be
the
whole
juniors
alive.
Yeah. That's the idea. Mm-hmm.
The whole deal.
Okay, then, and this could tie in, you know, with the anti-green card deal and the whole thing, wasn't it? Now, we get the green card. That's, we get that, then we're, you know,
we're
in the
way. Well, before that began, wasn't there a demonstration funding for the costume?
Then we're going to have to put on a show play, after we cross the bridge, you know. Let's take Joseph Bennett.
Yeah,
in the great.
I think we should keep that other thing in mind, though, for later.
What is our schedule for that? When are we going to leave? Well, we're at 12, and I thought we'd leave, you know, think it as late as we can. Well, we leave at 5.
Yeah, well, I think if we got a deadline, I think we'd get more serious.
We should even get started. Are we leaving? Do you feel like we're accomplishing something this morning? I don't. I feel like we're... Are we tired or just too restless? Then that comes the point when we get one guy does a trick, he gets the meme going, and three, you know, a pattern.
So in this case, we're assuming
it's Joseph and not Andrew's brothers until they're together. Because more Joseph's going to be like in the other place. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that at the very most two would do it, you know. Joseph, I think, and if he doesn't do it, then Boston or Chicago.
Why don't we just list all the ways you can get,
okay.
Have a
demonstration in front of the computer. How about a little Rudolph?
I think
And I ain't figuring his house is bad for the same reason. But it all does go right, make the murder happen, make everybody else get around. Thank God it's liable to happen to me
sometime.
The phone in? No, not
yet. Oh,
that's all right. We got the mill in the office. Phone in.
Phone in. Well, I think we're going to say, we can't threaten. Yeah. think the buyers might be at fault there.
This is really no different than what we were doing with Mayfair. We were stopping everything Mayfair itself. And if I have concern about any decision the board might make against us, then
Organize a campaign where, you know, they're like, we don't want it to happen anymore.
have all the food storage, all the labor, and all the churches that come in the game.
Thank you.
Everything you say goes on that little tape. It can be used against you. Where are we?
Joseph.
Coat of many colors?
No. Coat of many colors.
Well, no. Get Joseph campaign.
We've got 3.5 hours to go. Well, let's find a Benjamin, a real Benjamin. Benjamin.
Luna,
what's
that his name?
Yeah. No, who's the guy in Chicago now?
Baltimore.
Benjamin Baltimore.
Okay.
BB. BB. And then after BB, we'll get BB.
Try.
Okay, you want to talk to Mom how to get, you want to dream a little bit more? How to get Joseph?
Talk a little bit about that deadline. I think that if they, telegraphing the punch, and they'll be waiting for you if they knew when there was going to be a massacre. So I think that if they stop that, if they would find out, and they certainly will, that they're mobilizing against Joseph, that they will have some psychological advantage in it, in the nerve warfare. If you know that the demonstration's going to take place, and you have to know then.
I think we ourselves are have to step on that. Is there something I want to say in Cleveland? And several times they called tickets and all that stuff and got an agreement and you couldn't pick it, and everybody was. Stuff that they got cheated out of a good fight, you know. And I really wonder whether, you know, once you plan a demonstration and go through it, even if Joseph should have to call up, you know, a half hour before the demonstration, say, I agree.
Because the threat of something is a lot more than the fact. So, yeah, if anybody wants to settle with us before we carry out the settlement, we'll have to do it right away. Because one of you, they say, oh, I'm settling. You still hit them, you know. That's how they know how hard you can get them in.
But there'll be others. Right, the same. In other words, we should desert
them. Yeah, maybe we should rather talk about pulling some of these things together, because there are some things here that may not be of any use. But even more important, so there won't be any conflict among us. You know, we know what we're going to do when we get there. There won't be any arguments pulling this way and pulling that way. And we should do it this way. We shouldn't do it that way, you know. Losing a lot of your time and strength by not, you know, coordinating. And this is just a guideline because really, you know, and it's very flexible because when you get there, you may have to change your approach. You know, when you get there, you may just want to, you know, pick it inside the market instead of picketing outside. Or, you know, the things change once you confront it with reality.
I think Mr. Joseph does kind of difference for Ryan. He called him for me while he was doing this. I think he's very familiar with people he deals with. Did he know immediately?
Yeah.
I think just him, you know, on the phone deal.
What do you think would be the biggest pressure against him?
Advice.
And we agree with that, I guess, huh? Advice?
Yeah.
What would be the second biggest pressure? You want to know?
Yeah.
What would be the second biggest pressure?
Jewish.
They do this?
Yeah, the first thing. Getting
him from receiving it.
Well, that would be the biggest thing.
Oh, I thought we said the biggest thing was his bias. I'm sorry.
Well, if we can take him from receiving it, we wouldn't have to worry. We
would have to
follow. Well, that's something. But if he keeps him from receiving it, then the pressure is not really on him, you know. He can pressure other people to get it there. But once he has it, he can't get rid of it. That's where the pressure really depends on. But if he got this merchandise, he can't get rid of it. He's got an investment. Before it gets there, you know, he can pressure people and say, well, you know, I'm buying from you, and the order was placed for the railroad, for example. And we want to stop here. So the Jewish community would be number two. And this number three, I don't know how effective it would be here. But this is really
some people have to determine the unions to do money thing else.
They keep them from receiving. Was that time because that is the
railroad? Yes, the whole question of keeping them from receiving the great, it's really dependent on the unions. And we don't know how much support we can get from some of these states. So our hopes can't be very high. But on here, it's 50, number two, hearing the buyers, that's up to us, you know. That's within our reach. We can do it if we work at it.
Number 7 and number 14, are they really about the same thing?
Yeah, I think this is just additional things, you know.
Yeah.
But we don't want to spend our time leaving the neighborhood, you know, before we do this. You know, because it's just not a...
Well, the leafing the neighborhood probably ties in with the women in this office.
Yeah. But if you don't need him here, this is some kind of going to work. You know, I just...
Now your
council of
churches hanging
in the Jewish community. Yeah, I think this community can really, if you go see him, everybody goes up there to see him, call me with a rabbi. And you sit there and say, we want your help. And, you know, just use the social justice and help us right now. Put the pressure on us. I think we can get it. And also, if you go here and over here, you know, put the pressure on us. I think we can too. I don't know about political pressure. It can be, you know, effective if he's very caught up in.
Oh, we left one, and we got number 17.
He's probably very caught up.
The mafia, we forgot.
Yeah. How much do we know about Joseph?
Victor Joseph died about 15 years ago. And Dan Joseph is his son, and he went to this. But I think there's a breakthrough there because he has already called Jamara and he gave me, you know. So I think he's a, you know, game.
Do we know what percentage of his business is lined up with Jamara's?
We don't.
No.
We don't. The great
thing wouldn't break him, though, if he broke with Jamara.
No.
Oh, excuse me.
It would break Jamara.
The 10 more pitches. 10 more pitches. A lot of pitches, though. Well, yeah. Well, they were there once. And because what they're wearing, it would be changing, I don't know.
And too many problems to take yourself, like the Florida citizens,
but they can't.
We'll want to, if we get to that point, we're going to want a statement from him that we can get to the press that he's broken with Jamara and repudiate him and the whole thing.
Right. But actually what we want, see, we don't want him to stop buying grapes from Jamara as much as we want him to get Jamara to talk to
him. Oh, I know. Yeah. But if he says okay, And then he actually makes a try. We want that in the paper.
Oh, yeah, and if he can't get Jamara to bet, like, we won't, we said, well, I'll try, and he tried, and he misses, and he can't do anything. We're not going to let him just get great, you know. Just bad luck. He can go elsewhere. Also, what we want from him is we get him, or we get very friendly before we get him. We want information from him on the great industry, you know, the great sales in New York. We threw up by, you know, he's saying all these things, and I think if they get to that point, I think they get the information.
The other dealer that we were mentioning yesterday on the board, is there any kind of a connection between Joseph and them, you know, in the same sense of his relationship to Jamara, so that maybe he could call somebody or there would be some kind of communication with them. Well, Jamara is good, but he's not that valuable because they're going to start nibbling on it one by one. But anything like that now?
Not that we know of.
You're asking to stop buying Jamara and the other guys too, you know, because they don't strike rate.
But
we
definitely
did not settle it.
He
said,
I won't buy any more
Jamara's rate.
That isn't the point.
That had to be tied in with
getting a meeting report.
And also making it public. Yeah. He has to make a statement. If you can't get Jamara, make a statement that, you know, Jamara should deal with a union or that Jamara should negotiate.
We want to get him in the same position, and further, than we got Tribuno. But Tribuno was willing to,
right,
just about ready to blow it
right
on.
Right. And we've got to be very mobile, because if that happens, then we got to rush to Chicago, you know. Because
the
But if that happens, and we get two guys in the station, and I've met up 2 weeks or 3 weeks, that should be enough to go to Bruno. That should be enough.
He tries to get the meat, and he can't get the meat, but he gives up on the grapes.
That'll be it.
Yeah.
Here's some information throughout the state of New York.
Minimum wage and so forth, but a lot of it, well, you know, they're living in cities, but the really important point, the first point, they're really trying to find labor. a collector. Collector labor. Where we gather. We could have a black and green favorite, Joseph.
I'm
Well, it seemed to me that right after the first of the year. I say that because I think we want to be together for a year. And there isn't really anything happening any sooner than that, I don't think.
I agree with that. We have to also take into consideration to get back there and get set up is going to take 10 days.
What is
it? Well, it's going to take about 3 days of driving.
Yeah,
non-stop.
Yeah.
To get back there, it takes, unless you've flown a few people ahead, you know, to really set things up.
Well, where'd you get a hold of? Who's over there? What's his name?
Paul.
And the housing's going to be difficult. But maybe you'll have to live in New Jersey across the river, so as long as you stay together, it doesn't really matter where you have car. You'll have cars. And we'll assign the new car.
Yeah. Oh, you mean, are we going to take the bus or cars?
Oh, I see. Well, I don't know.
You'll beat you to death, that bus.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I think it has the ability.
You take the government off, then you'll be able to run the motor. I mean, I get another driver.
But if they're going to be the same driver, I don't think we're going to make them wrong.
I think the party would save us a lot of money.
I think the driver are going to take.
There's money going to be important.
Well, we are going to have some cars there. We'll have to have cars there.
Well, see, I don't know, I think the cars will be better because there'll be, we haven't discussed yet another thing, that's going to be the wine, you know. And I'm pretty sure that we'll get him on the wine. The wine is a different kind of, you know. You have labels here, I mean, you can really put on the heat on those guys. He's selling some to the south, you know, Alabama. What's that?
Louisiana.
Caesar,
what about his other
produce? Potatoes, cotton. Well,
is it very minimal?
Potatoes, we don't know yet.
Don't wear a shirt.
Don't wear clothes.
Yeah,
don't
wear a shirt. Boycott
cotton.
Great pickers of go-go. One thing about potatoes, they're planning only 2/3 of what I planted last year.
Oh, yeah?
They can get a subsidy on it?
No, because they lost the process.
Okay,
I was thinking, to say that we plan on 25, that's 5 cars. Right?
Wow.
How many new cars do we have? 5?
5. Well, yeah. The question is whether or not we can keep the one that Joe's supposed to go back to Ohio.
That makes 6.
There's one in Philadelphia that belongs to New York.
There's one except the maroon cars in Chicago.
Oh, you left it over there?
Yeah, I'm down in that.
There's one in Philadelphia, too.
John who?
Armin Dari.
Huh? How did you get back? Oh, I see.
They doubled up on the cars.
I assume we could use that. It's a New York car. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's like.
So we'll have to clear that with Bill. Why don't you make some notes for him and clear that with Bill?
The car in Ohio, the car in Philadelphia. If we could keep those
and one in
pick up the one in Chicago.
That's what, 3?
How many cars came out? 3?
Mondo, one, Joe. And manual, 3.
Yeah. Could it be 4 in this area? How many? 5 in this area. And then after that, then particularly, you know, after 9 o'clock, then the rest of the day you do
what?
And then you probably separate. I mean, you have subcommittees, one doing one thing, one doing the other. You don't have to Maybe that's the best. The talking general trim sitting over there.
Right, that's the
general.
Yeah.
Why don't we just talk a little bit about the... To be other work than... The way it seems to me from here, and this may all change because once you're faced with reality, it's a lot different. One of the things that I think is going to happen is that in the mornings you'll have to all get together and pick it, it would seem to me. But then, picketing after what, 9 o'clock? It's 10 o'clock, I guess, at the latest, huh?
Yeah.
10. Then there's no sense in picketing because then the market is... So then this other work has to be done. That means that... Well, whatever it is, but it seems to me that then there would have to be various things to do, you know. And so you'd have groups of people, one group in charge of this, one group in charge of that, one group in charge of that. Like commanders going out and hitting Joseph, you know, in two or three or four different directions. One would be in charge of getting the labor union, one would be in charge of, well, you know, whatever it is. And I don't know what it's going to be from here. But also, we're going to have someone in charge of the finances because that takes a lot of time, and Fred shouldn't do that because it takes most of his time, you know.
Well, it's not just the finances; it's the problems. It's the problems and the finance, you know.
Yeah, we got to have somebody.
There's the food, the well, you know, food,
about raising the money,
allowances, the.
No. You know, the food and the allowances and the
gasoline,
the doctor, you know. These things that come up, you know, somebody that's fast and good at it. Some of them being charged. So a Fed doesn't have to be doing that for doing some of the other things. And we'll need a cook. You don't want to eat?
I don't know how to cook.
Oh, I see. And any cooks back there?
Leo.
Huh? Leo?
Yeah, we've got one here.
Who?
Well, he can go and get another cook. When I see like this in danger,
okay. Dan's a pretty good cook, too.
Tony's a good cook.
Yeah?
Well, there are people that'll be going that are not in this room, I assume. Like the Herreras, for instance.
They're good cooks.
Yeah,
they're going?
But she's also a very good picket.
I know that. She has children, and she said that, you know, if we
can
get a baby.
Can you think of the different...
Well, we need the finances and the personal problems, right? Then with the cook.
You're talking about different classifications, you know, things
that have to be done by the group, you know.
No,
we're talking about the internal organization.
So you need somebody to coordinate tickets and organize tickets.
That's a full-time job.
Unless you're going to rely on who you have.
I wouldn't think so much of that as the Fred will be in charge, but he can, you know, decide who's going to do it. No, I'm thinking about just the great internal things. Things that sometimes we overlook. And one man winds up doing everything because, you know, nobody else is doing it. Which would be... keeping a financial record.
And, you know, getting the phone put in, getting the electricity, you know, everything that has to do with the housing, the meals, the personal problems, and the finances in general.
The accounting and, you know, this kind of thing. One person, really not fast enough so that he or she can do other things, you know. But it's also,
but isn't saddled with a major other responsibility.
Right.
See, when you talk about...
And run the office, somebody's got to stay there to, you know, you got to have an anchor.
Well, what about John Troy? He's the one who's been in New York, since we're going to start working in New York, so he didn't know all the runs. Yeah. I know we're talking about who haven't bought
the
jobs.
Yeah, well, you know, if I think John would be better for something else, you know, then
what?
I don't see him again.
Could we steal Mike?
Mike who?
Golden?
Maybe. Oh, we're going to have to concentrate on the boycott. That's the only... We're not going to do anything out into Lightning. You know,
okay.
Well, if we don't get him in the boycott, we're not going to get him there.
It's wide open.
Huh?
It's more or less wide open.
Yeah, I think we should concentrate on the boycott. That's the... Really, you know, the only ones that go in the boycott are those that won't go because, you know...
Oh, well, what about Andy, then?
Andy who?
Imuta. Or does he have to stay in Lena?
Well, you know, there's problems there. See, the only ones that didn't go out in the boycott the last time were the real old fellows that we kept there. And then those that the wife won't let them go, or they can't be, you know, too far away from the wife, and, you know, or the girlfriend, this kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, why didn't let us go either, too, and we're still going?
Right.
So what about the rest of them?
That's what I'm saying, you know. So we're going to have to do something about the rest. Either they go, or they're going to have to make room for somebody else. I don't know. But we have to apply the rules. There are some fellows that shouldn't go because, you know, there's special problems, and we like that. But some of the older Filipinos, we don't want them to go because, you know, it's difficult for them. But they can stay in Delano and they can do the picketing and, you know, those things have to be... We have to continue working in Delano, of course. But, and then there are others that can't go because their wife won't let them go. Well, I've got another wife, you know. Not my...
Yeah.
Mine is no problem with my wife, you know. And besides, I've been away from home too long. Your turn. For 20 years already. Well, 15 years almost. Right, Fred?
Yeah, you're older than we are.
That's right. And then we didn't come home every month either. So, and besides, I have to stay in the lane before they tell me.
So now it's for your young generation to get suffering the same way that you did.
I'm the only one that's ever suffered.
Where's the nail?
No, I'm just more suffering and seeing others suffer anyway.
Huh? Yeah.
I think exactly what happens is many people didn't suffer yet.
No, see, we put on the basis of, you know, we're never going to force anyone to do anything. If they don't want to do it, fine. If they want to do it, it's up to them, you know. That's the way it's going to work. You know, someday when it's a paying job, then, you know, somebody's gonna be in it for a really, really rude awakening, you know. At that point, then it becomes an entirely different proposition.
This is a crisis as far as, I know I'm new with the crisis going, but this is a crisis, and everybody that asks to go any place should go. And once he gets to where he's going, he has no business whatsoever coming back without a real honest-to-goodness excuse. If it was really up to me and somebody walked out of me, either he would go or I would go. I really mean that.
I agree with that.
Because what's good enough for the good is good enough for the gander, you know. Simple as that.
Well, you know, it's true, but there's always the, you know... And I can see in some cases you have to make exceptions, you know. But we still have those that, you know, who want to go.
About how many people do you think you want to take away?
Friends. Yeah. I'd like to see about 40, really, you know.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, there's some key people that we're going to keep from this group here. Not key people, but some people here that are not going to go with you because we need them for something else, you know. You know, there's some people in Delano that are key people because we got contracts, and that's the other part of the union that's got to keep going. Like, right now we're having a big problem with Shanti.
Freddy's
going to
go with that, eh?
Yeah.
You ready to go with that?
No.
Freddy's going to go with that?
Yeah.
You ready to go with
that? No. Unfortunately, it's not like it used to be in the beginning where we just had one thing to do, you know, the strikes or the boycott. Now, you know, we got the other contracts and the other commitments, and that takes a lot of time. So we got to have people in Delano doing that. But I think that we can send more people, you know, than 25. I think from 25 to 40 people would be good. And then we don't want to send, you know, we had some bad experiences this last time, especially with drinking, you know. So we send a guy over up to New York, and then we have to send him back to Delano, you know. You know, it's a lot of expense and a lot of...
Plus the problems in the road.
The problems that you are confronted with, you know, it makes it very hard for you to live with him, and, you know. And then, you know, we never want to be rude to anyone, and so, you know, we keep moving from
one
place to the other.
Well, if anyone wants to come back, you just have to walk. I think it's a burden of duty.
Yeah. Well, look, the union, see, this is the way it's going to be. Look, the union's going to be built by a few guys. And those who are willing to sacrifice are the ones who are going to build the union. And the others aren't going to be with us too long anyway, you know. It's just like a station for them. They're going to be moving on to other things, going back to the field. But those who... See, the fanatics are the ones who are going to build the union, and maybe most of you are fanatics, which is a good thing. Don't get me wrong, I think it's a damn good thing. We should have some more.
A portly fanatic? Isn't that what Tom Simon? No,
a portly Tolinsky.
Oh, I thought they said a portly. Somebody told me they said a portly fanatic. And then somebody told me, I didn't read it.
Yeah. No, agitator. No. Near fanatic disciple? Oh, yeah?
Yeah, fanatic. The word fanatic.
The word fanatic.
Almost fanatic.
But how's that?
He's already in New York.
Yeah. The real thing. No, that's
who's going to get the houses prepared for us now? Well, somebody will have to go from here to prepare them.
Well, if we can get Paul Sanchez to do it, we'll call him. Well, in fact, we'll call him as soon as we get through here, before we leave here. Oh, it's already. We'll call him in the morning from Delano.
It's not going to be. If he had some money and he, he's probably going to stay. It's just an aside, when you get him, ask him wherever he gets it, he'll phone him right away. It's going to take a week to get a phone.
Okay. Mm-hmm. A phone and
by the way, several months.
Yeah.
And
you know, see, even though I'm not talking about being a spendthrift, you know, but. We shouldn't get all hung up on too much on money. I mean, you're not going to get the place fast without spending money.
I think we spend a lot of money on the boycott. I mean, you know, we have
a lot of money on the boycott, but I'm saying that if you're going to go for a top start with 40 people, you're not going to be able to go around looking for someone to donate a place for people to live, you know.
In New York, you have to buy a place. You only be able to rent one for 40 people. No, where can you get a place for 40 people?
Why don't we get, it's
going to be a real difference. I think you have to go across the river.
I bet it'd be easier to get a place for 40 than for 6. Because you can get a big hall kind of thing, you know. I bet it would be easier.
I thought
the Browns had kind of looked into that at one point when we were planning on going back down for Charlie Minetti.
So actually, we're gonna have an office manager. That's what we're gonna have really. We're gonna take care of finances, you know, buying the food. That's not the cook. Somebody's gonna be the cook and looking after the personal problems, the doctor, you know, all these things. And the problems back in Delano and communicating with the Delano office. And then you're going to have someone at that phone all the time. You know, unless it's an extreme emergency, you need every available hand, but I think you should always have someone that can handle the telephone, take messages, write them down, you know, leave these things.
And make the calls,
that's right, and make the calls.